It looks like all the members are here and it's 9:30. So Dr. Davis Wilson, you can get started whenever you're ready.
Excellent, thank you. The time is now 9:30 and I'll go ahead and call the Committee on Behavior Analysts meeting to order. Ms. Folks, can we get a roll call?
Yes, Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Rates?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And just some general remarks. Again, we are in our lovely pandemic, still utilizing technology for all of our meetings. There has been just a lot of extra work for the board staff. So I want to again commend them on the work that they're doing, how quickly they're getting information out to both the committee and the board. We are very appreciative of everything that they're doing. We did get two emails this morning. If you guys have not gotten them yet, you will want them for this meeting. One is particular to a document for one of the agenda items that we will need when we review that item. And then the other one is for executive session. I don't know that in this format we've done executive session, but it's a little bit different than the phone calls because we do have the videos. And so if at any time we do go into executive session, you will want to turn your video off, make sure that your sound is off, and then you will call in on a phone to the phone number that was given to you in that email. So it's a little bit different, very important that you disable your camera and that you mute your computer as well. And I think that's all the general comments, unless anybody else has anything else to add. I don't know, board staff, if you guys have anything else to add. Excellent. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to agenda item number 4, the approval of minutes for June 26, 2020. Has everybody had a chance to review those? And do we have any questions or concerns with those? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I motion we approve the minutes.
Excellent. We have one motion. And I'll go ahead and second that. So we'll have a motion and a second, and those meeting minutes have been approved.
We will need to take a vote.
Oh, thank you. You knew I was just going to keep moving. All right. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Same signal? All right, hearing none, the motion carries. We will now move to agenda item 5. Ms. Pagnon, I see that we have at least one applicant for agenda number 5 on the line. Are you aware of any other applicants that we have on the line?
I am not. There are a couple of unidentified callers, so I would encourage anyone with the number ending in the callers with the numbers ending in 183 or 635 to let us know if you're an applicant calling in.
All right, then we'll go ahead and see the items in order. Moving on to agenda item 5, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendations to the board pertaining to the approval of behavior analyst applicants. The first behavior analyst application for licensure is Brittany Lachey Jones, and I am the lead on this application. So I will provide an overview. Ms. Jones passed her exam in February of 2020. She graduated with a Master's of Applied Behavior Analysis from Ball State University in May of 2015. She did supervision in two states, one in Arizona under a licensed behavior analyst and one in Ohio under a certified Ohio behavior analyst. Their licensure is a little bit different. And those dates were between September of 2017 to September of 2018 for a total of just over 1,600 hours. In review of her application, Ms. Jones did answer yes to question number 4 pertaining to, or sorry, to question number 12 pertaining to any current or pending legal issues. And she has provided the board all of the records pertaining to that incident. That particular incident did require for Ms. Jones to successfully complete probation. And I do have a few questions for Ms. Jones after the review, but I want to see if anybody else has anything that they would like to add related to the application before we introduce Ms. Jones. Hearing none, Ms. Jones, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always helpful when the applicants join on the call so that we can ask some questions. I do have just a few questions for you related to that particular incident, and I was hoping that you could provide some clarification. My first question is pertaining to the first page of the application where you list that the incident was resolved in March of 2018. Can you explain to us the discrepancy, what we received from the rest of the documentation was that probation was not actually completed until March of 2019. Can you explain from your perspective the discrepancy between the March of 2018 dates reported and the information we have on the March 2019?
Yeah, so March 2018 was when I attended court and everything was decided that I was going to do probation. So I kind of thought that everything was resolved then, just because I got all of the probation requirements and then I completed probation in 2019.
Excellent, thank you. And for board staff, I think at a minimum, we will want that first page to be revised because there is the handwritten note on there. And that is for public record, so we will want to make sure that that's revised. Ms. Jones, my second question is related to the incident in itself. In your report and your letter to the committee, you stated that you went out with friends. Afterwards, you proceeded to drive but decided to stop at a gas station and take a nap. It's a little bit inconsistent with the police report in that the police report was responding to a call potentially of somebody concerned about your driving and that there was actually damage to your car as well as a flat tire. So I'm interested in kind of the discrepancy a little bit, if you could explain between making the decision, hey, you know what, I'm going to pull over and take a nap, I shouldn't be driving right now, versus a disabled vehicle that probably led to you not being able to drive.
Yes. So to be completely honest, I was very intoxicated and I hit a guardrail on the freeway and I realized that that was not okay to be driving. So then that's when I pulled off and went to the gas station to rest.
Excellent. I appreciate your honesty. I know these questions are not always fun to ask in front of a group of people, so I appreciate that. And then you touched on my last question, and that was the level of intoxication, which it sounds like you are fully aware of the significance of the level of intoxication that was found. Can you talk to the committee a little bit about your current status of alcohol consumption as far as maybe some lessons learned and are you currently under the influence or do you currently have an issue with alcohol at this time?
At this time, no. I'm completely sober. It was a very big wake-up call to me. One, getting, in trouble with law enforcement, and two, when I did hit the rail, it did lots of damage on my car, and I realized that, I'm so lucky that I'm alive, and I didn't hurt or, cause injury to anybody else, so it was just a very, very big wake-up call to me, and so I do not drink alcohol anymore.
Excellent, thank you. Committee members, do you guys have any additional questions for Ms. Jones? All right. Hearing none, Ms. Jones, again, I appreciate you being here. These are some difficult calls to be on, and I appreciate you being forthcoming. I do want to just comment, and right now we're going to move into kind of deliberations with the board, so there won't be any additional questions for you, Ms. Jones. But to the committee members, you know, my only real concern it was originally that this is one of the first that we've seen in which the offense has been more recent, and some of the others we've been able to have kind of a history of time of kind of good behavior, if you will. And so that was the first thing that caught my eye. But then the discrepancies, and I think that it's difficult to know how much information to share or not to share. I know that board staff had a little bit of difficulty trying to get all of the information in, but I was a little bit concerned about the vagueness of the description from the applicant versus what the significance of the police report had. Having said that, she did complete a 12-month probation, all of which was in good standing, and the case has been resolved. And from my perspective, I think, and obviously having the opportunity to hear her today, I would be comfortable with moving her application forward for recommendation from the full board, recommendation of approval for the full board. Excellent. Hearing no other comments, we'll go ahead and move to application number 2. Again, thank you, Ms. Jones, for joining us. You're welcome to stay, but you, of course, don't have to, but you're welcome to stay for the whole meeting if you'd like. Application number 2 is Ms. Carol Bell. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on this application. Can you please provide us an overview?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe that the members of the committee should have received a second document outlining the individual's supervised experience. And after looking at that, I sent Kathy, board staff, just a quick note, just because I do have a question just about the hours, and it's probably my fault. So Kathy, if you want to look at that email, then you can chime in a second. Ms. Bell comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She is a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Hawaii, and we welcome her here to Arizona. She did indicate, I'll get to that in a second, she went to the University of Texas. She studied education and human development. She received, or she had a focus in educational psychology, received a certificate in applied behavior analysis. She did indicate on number 12 regarding previous incidents that included essentially interaction with law enforcement. You will see a note on page 3 of the PDF where she discloses in the explanation that in 2011 she was found to be a minor in possession of alcohol in Texas. She indicates that she pled guilty, did community service, as well as alcohol awareness course as a minor, and that case was expunged. We have further documentation from the city in Texas that provided to back that up, that this had been, the files had been expunged. And so we have clarification on that. I would point to the committee that the individual has been successful in receiving a level 1 fingerprint clearance card from the state of Arizona. That is page 5 of the PDF for those that are interested. With regard to supervision, the individual has worked at under the supervision of Christina Bartel at SEEK, and then at Ashley LeBay at the Autism Treatments. Both individuals have the correct licensure for the state, the one in Arizona, and then licensure did not go into full requirements in Texas during the supervision period. My only question, and it could be an error on my part, in trying to identify the 1,500 hours individuals' BCBA work, which obviously is done, she has a BCBA, I can only account for the 1423 that was indicated on from Christine Bartel, which we arrived, which we received from board staff. And then another 63.25 that was included in the original packet. So those are the two documents I have. Kathy, am I missing one? And that very well could be.
There we are. I know I'm off you. The LeBay one, the BACB experience verification form indicates 77.25.
Yep, perfect. 77.25. I'm sorry. And I was looking at the, I apologize. I looked at a number of independent experience hours. And so I apologize. That is my fault. As I was staring at that, I realized I highlighted the the incorrect number. So with that, the individual has broken through the 1500 mark, which would make sense. I have no issues with the indication of a yes on 12. I believe that was a long time ago. That was when the individual was a minor. That was 9 years ago. And she has been licensed in Hawaii and been a BCBA for quite some period. I, without reservation, believe that we can move this forward for approval. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Does anybody have any questions, concerns, or comments related to this application? Hearing none, we will move to applicant number 3, Carol A. Rodriguez. And Dr. Rates, you are the lead on this application. Can you please provide us an overview?
Yes. So Ms. Rodriguez received her master's in psychology in 2012 from Walden University, and then completed a certificate program in ABA from FIT, so many acronyms, in 2016. She completed supervision at Easter Seals in California between 2014 and 16 for a total of 1,500 hours. She did indicate that she has her BCBA. I think there was an error on the original application. I see some email communication with board staff, so I'm not sure if we have that revised, but she indicated that she's licensed in California. And that's not a state that's licensed. So I think there's just an inverse here that needs to happen on question 5 and 6 with the date of her BCBA certification, and then just adjusting that yes for being licensed in the state of California. But outside of that, I did not see any issues with this application, and would suggest that we get that correction and then move forward.
Thank you. Is there any other feedback from board staff? Or I'm sorry, committee members? All right, hearing none, we will move on to item number 4, Jenna Lundquist. Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead on this application. Could you please provide us an overview?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So Ms. Lundquist, first I want to disclose that Ms. Lundquist is employed at an agency to whom I consult, but I've not worked with her and feel that I can review her application without bias. Ms. Lundquist received her BCBA in June of this year. She graduated December of 2019 from Ball State University with a Master of Arts in Special Education, focusing on applied behavior analysis. She received 1,514 hours of supervision under Jane Tamick and Sandra Rivers, who provide supervision in Illinois and Georgia, respectively, in which there's no state licensure, and got her remaining hours in the state of Arizona with Emily Davis, who is an Arizona LBA. I don't note any concerns in this application. I'd recommend forwarding it to the board for approval.
Excellent. Thank you. Are there any committee members with any questions or comments? Hearing none, we will move to item number 5, Jennifer Howley. Oh, and that is mine. I will provide an overview. Ms. Howley passed her exam in August of 2015. She graduated with a Master's of Education from the University of Cincinnati in May of 2015. Her supervised experience occurred from August of 2013 to September of 2014 in California, where licensure is not required. She did complete just over 1,600 hours for that supervision experience. They reviewed her application and see no concerns at this time, and I would recommend that
her application be forwarded to the full board for approval. Are there any committee members that have any questions or comments? Hearing none, we will actually be skipping number 6 for the time being and going to number 7, Rachel Fulcenti. Dr. Rates, you are the lead on this application. Can you please provide us an overview?
Yes. So Rachel received her master's degree from Edcott College in August of 2019. She completed her supervision hours for a total of 1,502 at Neshoba Learning Group, and that was under 2 supervisors, Shannon Murphy and David Rosenberg. She also indicated that she received her BCBA certification in February of 2020. In reviewing the application, I did not note any items of concern and would recommend we move forward.
Are there any other comments from the committee members? Hearing none, what I would like to do at this time is go ahead and see a motion on the applicants that we've reviewed so far. I have Ms. Jones and Ms. Rodriguez as 2 applicants that board staff will need to reach out to get edits to the first 2 pages. Ms. Rodriguez is page 1, Ms. Jones is page 2 to get edits to those applications. Provided we receive those edits, those are okay to move forward to the full board. We have Ms. Bell, Ms. Lundquist, Ms. Holly, and Ms. Fulcenti, all with recommendations for approval to the full board. Do we have a motion?
I also move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have a motion.
Second. I'll second.
Excellent. And a second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, we will now move to agenda item 5B, Behavior Analyst Application for Licensure by Universal Recognition. We have 1 application, that's Kayla Ziolko. Dr. Senhoff, you are the lead on this application. Can you please provide us an overview?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ziolko has been licensed in Tennessee since 2017, which satisfies the adopted substantive policy requiring an applicant to be licensed in another state for at least 12 months. She provided evidence of residency with her Arizona driver's license, and I did not know any concerns with her application, and I'd recommend forwarding it to the board for approval.
Is that a motion, Dr. Senna?
Yes, it is.
Dr. Davey, I'll second.
Excellent. We have a motion and a second. So we will be looking to forward Ms. Ziolko's application to the full board. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, that motion carries. At this time, what I would like to do is turn over the chair seat to Dr. Davey. Dr. Davey is going to see items number 5, 6, and items number 6A. Because I am recused from both of these items, I am going to go ahead and jump off the call, and board staff will contact me once those items are complete. Please, well, you've got Ms. Galvin here. She will also remind you, please be sure to vote on both of those items before I rejoin the meeting. And I will turn it over to Dr. Davey. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll do my best to fill the outstanding shoes that you fill as our chairwoman. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that, and I know that Heidi will yell at me if I screw this up. So, all right, moving to agenda item 5-6, I believe, or 5-6, that is Nicole Dupre. I'm going to screw that up. Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead on this. Would you like to provide us a summary of this application?
Ms. Dupre, I'm Dr. Davey, sir, following along, received her BCBA in June of this year. She graduated in December of 2013 from Arizona State University with a Master in Education Curriculum and Instruction with a specialization in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,581 rounding up hours of supervision under several Arizona licensed LBAs. I didn't note any concerns for this application. I'd recommend moving forward to the board for approval.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stenhoff. Any comments from any other board members? All right. Hearing none, we need a motion to move that forward. Yes. So, Don, was that, Dr. Stenhoff, do I consider that a motion from you?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to move forward.
Do we have a second? Thank you, Dr. Reyes. So we have the motion, we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries, thank you very much. Moving on to item number 6, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation to the board pertaining to the approval or denial of behavior analyst applicant Colton Oliver. I am the lead on this. However, I will turn it over to board staff to give us kind of a summary of where we stand. And then we'll take off from there.
Dr. Dave, I can provide you with a brief a summary to the committee. I believe Mr. Oliver is on the line. Mr. Oliver did apply for behavior analyst licensure in 2019. At that same time, the board did receive a complaint against him. The CBA did review that application in conjunction with the complaint in 2019 and recommended to the board that his license be denied for unprofessional conduct. In January of 2020, the board did review that application and ultimately decided to deny it. The notice of denial was sent to Mr. Oliver indicating his appeal rights. However, he chose not to appeal the board's denial. Approximately 2 months later, he submitted a second application for licensure, which is before the committee today. As you're aware, I did prepare an investigative memo regarding some concerns that I had discovered during the investigation. If the committee would like more information, I can certainly go into that. But please let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. We appreciate the summary there. It's my understanding we also have the applicant on the phone. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe he is muted. Mr. Oliver, can you please unmute? Thank you.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. So this, I don't believe that there's any sort of reason to how we need to proceed, considering this is not a formal hearing or anything like that with regard to a disciplinary issue. This is around the discussion of this application. And so we can discuss this in terms of the current application in front of us. The documentation's been complete. I think the question
Dr. Davey.
Yes.
Dr. Davey, this is Jean Galvin. You may want to ask Mr. Oliver if he wants to make kind of any opening statements or corrections to Ms. Michelson's summary or if he has anything to say.
Okay. Mr. Oliver, you heard our attorney chime in there giving me direction. Do you have anything you'd like to add at this time? I do suspect that later on we'll be asking you a few questions.
Yeah, and I'm in attendance to answer any questions that the committee might have for me. I guess I would like to make a statement in that, my hope is that with this current application, it instills some trust in the committee moving forward. Hopefully my application and the documents attached with that instill that trust.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. So with regard to the actual application, it was completed. The individual has provided us information on his supervision. The application is completed in the correct form. I think the issue for me as the individual reviewing it is really the fact that 60 days after we denied the initial license, the applicant came forward again seeking licensure and outlining the ethical continuing eds that he had taken on around billing and around ethics. And also, as his letter indicates, kind of starting on 9 of 209 in our documentation, getting supervision from his current lawyer. And really weighing out what the individual did, the applicant did over the course of those 60 days. So as the reviewer, I think several things kind of came to mind. One, I'm not sure that Based on the reason for denial, which was a question around moral character with regard to the incident of forging a signature on a time or on a treatment timesheet, as well as some other issues with regard to billing and time when he was employed previously as a behavior technician working towards his BCBA, was of, you know, that's what still kind of sits there. And I believe that the applicant has said, you know, he's looking to instill trust with us. I think I would point out to the board that we have still not heard from the BACB with regard to their investigation. When reading through the documentation, legal counsel for the BACB indicated that this had gone beyond coaching mechanism, which the BAC has, and was going directly to the DRC. And that process, I believe, was an 8-week process. And to date, we still don't have information. I would remind the board that we do have jurisdiction over Mr. Oliver because we have a pending application. However, he is certified by the BACB. And I, for one, would be interested to hear what they have to say moving forward prior to making any real decision on this. Second thing I have is really probably around the information that's provided. I do appreciate the continuing ed efforts that you provided us. A lot of them are about services in schools. I know that there's probably not a ton out there. I appreciate that you took some billing credits or billing classes as well. I think in looking at the documentation that was provided as part of the packet and part of the board staff's investigation, I'd like to really highlight a few things for the committee. I won't read through the first several pages of the document that Ms. Michelson provided us, but I do think that there's a lot of pertinent information, perhaps, you know, particular to the background piece. I'll direct you to page 2 of the PDF, which talks about the behavior analyst application. One interesting point in terms of the applicant's information from his current employer is that we have received information that Mr. Oliver did not list his previous employer, for which he was terminated for the acts that essentially led to him not being licensed in the first place. He omitted that, and he provided some information. And in a second, I'll give him a chance to respond to that as I kind of lay out some questions I have for the individual. I would also orientate the committee to the information from the BACB on page 3 of the report, and we will kind of go from there. Mr. Oliver, I appreciate you being on the line. So I think the first question I have is really around the incident of the application you have with your current employer. You indicated in some of the responses that you decided not to list your previous employer, even though the application clearly asked for that. The application gives you a chance to check whether or not this employer is a reference. Do you want to just briefly discuss for the committee, and again, I think this speaks again to this idea of building trust, why that would not have been indicated on your application to your current employer?
Yes, thank you for your question. And to be honest and to answer the question in its entirety, I disregarded that information on my application with my current employer as to make an attempt to really separate myself from my previous employer and the individuals that hired me. One of those individuals being on this this very board. That was my attempt to reduce any potential conflicts of interest with the previous employer and my current employer moving forward, as well as the board today. That was my intention.
Mr. Oliver, this is Jean Galvin. Could you just clarify for me? You said someone from your current employment position is on this board?
No, sorry, that might be my mistake. Somebody from my previous employment is. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And for the record, I just show that someone that's indicated is recused from all matters related to this case.
Yes.
So you chose to, I mean, so again, this gets to the point of being truthful, right? And to character, you know, omitting that, there's the ability for you to check on that application. I looked right at it to not use as a reference, right? And your indication of separating from that organization, again, is counterindicated by the resume you provided to us, for which one of your references is actually an employee of your previous employer. Explain how those two realities can coexist.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when looking at employment and, you know, asking that organization to be a reference on that application, I again felt it best to keep those individuals out of making references towards my application for my current employer. It might have been my misunderstanding on the application for my current employer in terms of listing them as a previous employer, but not indicating them as a reference to be contacted. And just so the board is clear, the supervisor that is directly in charge of me at my position for my current employer is fully aware of the situation and the status of my application, as well as the reasons for the denial of the previous application. So to answer your question in terms of, you know, truthfulness and instilling trust moving forward, you know, I really have tried to put my best foot forward since the end of last year, and, you know, indicating to my current employer what's going on, and being as you know, honest and forthcoming as I can be, not just with this board, but also with my current employer.
So I'll just orientate the committee to page 136 in our packet, which is is Mr. Oliver's application to his current employer. Previous employment is about halfway down. You'll see that the absence of his previous employer that brought the initial complaint is not listed. You'll also note at the bottom of each area, may we contact your previous supervisor as a reference? There's the option for a yes or a no for the individual to opt out of that for whatever reason. So,
And Dr. Davey, I apologize for interrupting. Can I clarify one point? I think that might be helpful for the committee. One of the other concerns that was noted in the investigative report was that during my recent email correspondence with his current employer's attorney, they did relay to me that Mr. Oliver had not disclosed the board's denial of his application and that they were not aware. And when they had inquired with him on various occasions within the past few months, he just told them that it was under review. And for the committee's reference, the email from that attorney is on page 199. Indicating that they were not previously aware. So Mr. Oliver may wish to respond to that, but I just wanted to notate for the committee.
Absolutely. We'll let Mr. Oliver respond to that in just 1 second. I want to finish up the application. 138, you also see the fact that there is a reference, the second reference actually tied to the previous employer. And so there would be contact made. And so I'm having a hard time linking the fact that, you know, the previous employer is not listed as a previous employer, but yet an individual who works for the previous employer is a reference. And so trying to distance between that organization just doesn't seem to quite add up to me. So Mr. Oliver, I'll pause there. You can comment to mine, and then I think we should probably have a discussion around why general counsel for your current employer does not seem to see eye to eye with your statement that your current employer is aware of the situation. So I'll pause there. Thank you.
Yeah, to answer your question, Dr. Davey, the reference made on that application gave me direct permission to use them as a reference, and so I thought that was appropriate. I'd also like to indicate that individual is no longer employed with my previous employer. As far as my understanding goes, I haven't had contact with that individual in quite some time, but it's my understanding that they are no longer employed with our shared previous employer.
Okay. And then would you like to respond to the information that was provided by your current employer's general counsel with regard to a lack of knowledge with regard to the previous proceedings?
Yes, of course. So as everybody on the board is well aware, the review of the previous application is a public record and accessed to the public. In terms of my communication with my current employer and the supervisors, I was counseled by legal counsel to be as forthcoming as I could while also not self-incriminating. And that was a suggestion made to me moving forward in this process, and something that I've tried to walk a very delicate line of and a balanced line, while also, again, just trying to put my best foot forward and instill trust not only in this board but in the current employer. When confronted by my current employer about my previous application, I was more than honest and forthcoming, and taking responsibility for those actions dating all the way back to last year. And so it's been a very delicate and nuanced situation that I've tried to walk very carefully. And, when asked and when approached about these situations, I've been more than truthful.
All right. Thank you for that statement. Next thing I'd like to just talk to you about is your, and then obviously I'll open it up for other committee members to have their questions. Page 139 of the PDF file has a resume from you. It is in your names in pretty bold red letters with the fancy monogram CO in brackets. Are you aware of that document?
I am, yes.
Okay. So can you, when was that document created?
I don't have that exact date.
Was it recently? Can you at least opine a little bit on when, the last time as you looked at that?
I would say the last time I take a really good look at it would be at the beginning of this year.
Yeah. So has it been, the document we're looking at has most likely not been updated since the denial of your license. Is that a fair statement from you?
Yeah, I would say so.
So I think this kind of leads into my last line of questioning, and that is around you being a clinical supervisor designee at your current employer. That is from the information we have, including your vita that's on 139, which states you are a clinical supervisor, BCBA. You began with them 1/6/2020. All documentation from your employer indicates that that's the position that you were hired for, the salary you were paid. Can you talk to us about what your position is, what your title is, and your daily activities for the agency today?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that answer to that question has been a very delicate balance. I am, currently employed with them as a clinical supervisor designee, which indicates that I don't have the full clinical supervisor title. I'm still currently in the training process. And so my responsibilities in the day-to-day work for my current employer has changed quite drastically, especially with the onset of, the COVID-19 pandemic and, my current employer's adjustment to, delivery of services. I've worked very closely with my current supervisor to ensure that I'm fulfilling the job requirements for my current employer, such as, training caregivers, training staff, providing direct treatment, making treatment adjustment and updates, while also, being closely counseled by my direct supervisor, who has the LBA and is allowed to bill for these activities. And so I've been working hand in hand with her in terms of, you know, being trained, gaining information on an experience on being a clinical supervisor while also staying within the guidelines for insurance billing. So to answer your question, you know, my job started at the beginning of this year with a lot of training. They have one of the best, you know, training courses that, you know, I've ever had in terms of, you know, getting that from an employer. So that had been a majority of the beginning of my year. And then with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, my responsibility shifted to more of a direct treatment model, where I was providing direct services for the clients that we serve via telehealth, in-home services as our centers were shut down to comply with CDC regulations. So that's been the majority of my day-to-day work, I would say. As of right now, the current responsibilities that I have are a bit of a mixed bag. I'm still in the training process. I'm training behavior technicians. I am currently working with my supervisor on cases that are being billed in the state of Arizona to comply with those insurance regulations and the LPA. And then I'm also providing supervision and oversight for clients and individuals that are outside of the state that don't require that LBA licensure. So for example, I'm working very closely with individuals in New Mexico, providing supervision, providing training, making treatment updates, things like that. And also, you know, supporting the clinic here in Arizona.
So let me just be very blunt. I appreciate that long-winded answer, but I don't think you answered my question. In terms of, and maybe I didn't ask it very well, are you at this particular point, well, let's go, I guess you've identified a couple of periods prior to COVID, so like January to March, and then COVID kind of onsets and your responsibilities shift. My question is, are you practicing, are you designing, are you implementing ABA or behavior analytic services with your current services? Like, are you engaged in the act of behavior analysis in what you're currently doing for your current employer?
Yes, I would say that's correct. Again, while staying within, you know, within the guidelines, within.
So explain to me what those guidelines are. What are those guidelines? And delineate those for me so that I have, so again, to your point of building trust, so that I have a good understanding that you have not been acting as a, when I hear a clinical supervisor, BCBA, operating in the state of Arizona, I hear you better be licensed.
That's
correct. If you're overseeing technicians and you are there modifying treatment and giving feedback to those technicians, those all fall under the practice of behavior analysis in our state and would require you to be licensed.
That's correct. I think the caveat there is I'm not performing any of those actions or duties without the direct supervision of my current supervisor. And
explain to me how that's a caveat.
Because for example, if I'm in a... I would be in a direct session with that client making changes to the treatment program while being supervised by a licensed behavior analyst.
So there's a technician in the room, you in the room, and your supervisor in the room?
I would be acting as the technician in that situation and making those treatment updates, but again, under the direct supervision of a licensed behavior analyst. Mm-hmm.
And that is occurring, so when you are in the room with a client or you're doing this via telehealth, are you acting as BCBA or are you acting as technician?
I'm acting as a technician in that instance.
So is your job, is your statement here today, and I do not want to put words in your mouth, that you are essentially an RBT for your current employer?
Again, I think it depends on what client we're talking about. When it pertains to individuals here in the state of Arizona, yes, I am acting more as a behavior technician in those instances, providing you know, the implementation of a treatment plan that's being supervised by somebody with a licensed behavior analyst certification. For individuals outside of the state, I would be acting more as a BCBA.
Okay. So I see that you took multiple CEUs on billing. When you are working with the individuals here in this state, so let's stick to Arizona. Okay. What service codes, what billing codes are you using or are you putting on your notes when you're working with these individuals?
Direct therapy. Not, I don't know the direct code off the top of my head. I don't want to indicate a code that I'm using without having the exact code that I'm billing for. But the code would indicate direct treatment.
Direct treatment. So it's not going to indicate program modification as you identified as something you're doing currently.
Correct.
And when you put in your case notes, when you put in your case notes with regard to billing, I'm not sure exactly what your current employer uses as an EHR, but what are the drop downs that you can select with regard to identifying the types of services that were provided?
For strictly individuals in
the state. Arizona.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Arizona only.
Those times and those sessions are direct sessions, and I'm billing as an RBT, essentially.
But is it my understanding that right now you're not an RBT, correct? You have let that lapse.
I'm sorry, excuse me, a behavior technician.
Because you're currently not registered as a behavior technician, correct?
That's correct.
And are you aware of whether or not your employer's contracts in the state of Arizona require that the technician be an RBT or not?
I'm not fully aware. Again, I'm acting, you know, in accordance with what my employer is.
Well, I don't think that's a fair statement given our previous discussion, Mr. Oliver, of you needing to be essentially educated and rehabilitated and informed around billing codes, billing services, what it takes to essentially operate in the state of Arizona, and those kinds of questions. I think, particularly in light of the path we've gone down for the last, since the initial complaint, those are the kinds of questions under the supervision that I would want to be asking. And I would want to know, and I would be very concerned about what those answers are. And I hear a lot from you, and please know that I'm saying this in the spirit of helping you move along, but there's, you know, you say there's a lot of gray area, or you're trying to walk a fine line. You know, our statutes and rules are very clear around what needs to happen. And being truthful is very, you know, it's difficult. Honesty is hard. I have little kids. They, you know, they don't always want to tell me the truth, but honesty is still the best policy around those things. And we're all lifelong learners and none of us are perfect. But I do think that given, you know, the CEUs you took, the discussion we had last time, understanding what your services are being billed out as and the services that you're providing, you know, that you're essentially attesting to by filling out the EHR documentation need to align to what you're allowed to do in the fine state of Arizona. So I will stop there and let some other board members ask their questions, and then we can move on. Dr. Stenhoff, Dr. Reyes, do you have any questions for the applicant?
I don't have any additional questions. I think the questions that I had you covered quite well, Dr. Day, so thank you. So I don't have any additional questions at this time for the applicant, no.
Dr. Stenhoff?
I'm formulating based on your questions. So, Mr. Oliver, Dr. Davis.
No, I was just going to say, I'll give you one more second because I saw in my notes that there was one thing I had not asked. Mr. Oliver, you were hired as a BCBA supervisor designee. I forget the exact title here. I will speak it so it's on the record. Clinical supervisor designee. That is your job title when you were hired. To your knowledge, is that your job title today?
Yes, it is.
And so when I read through the job description that's provided for that job title and the salary that's tied to it, that job description provided by your employer is very clear that you would need to have a license in the state of Arizona to engage in the responsibilities that are listed there. And the responsibilities that I'm talking to are the ones at the bottom of the very first page of that, page 140 in the PDF file: lead, supervise, and mentor treatment teams of technicians, manage patient services based on policy and procedure, set up and achieve performance goals with patients, guardians, treatment teams. Those sorts of activities directly align to the practice of behavior analysis in our state as a licensed professional. And if that is still your job title, I'm wondering why your description of your activities, if they are that more of a technician, why that job title is not adjusted to match that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I guess my statement would be around differentiating between servicing clients within the state versus outside of the state. When acting within the state, I'm not acting as a licensed behavior analyst. I'm acting as a behavior technician, and I'm acting within that job title and those responsibilities. With clients outside of the state, where the LBA isn't required, I am acting in that clinical supervisor designee role.
Dr. Senhoff, hopefully that gave you a little bit of time to formulate. Thank you.
So, Mr. Oliver, I appreciate the explanation and following up with some of Dr. Davies' questions. You've indicated that you've sort of dichotomized your position, meaning in one realm you are working as a BCBA according to the definition and the description of your job. Well, billing in the state of Arizona, you are not. One of the expectations to practice behavior analysis or not is there's got to be clarity to everybody that you are in fact not a practicing behavior analyst. And I'm curious on how you're clarifying that to the individuals in the state of Arizona that you are not, because looking at the documentation that I have in your CV, your resume, that it says BCBA on there. And as Dr. Davey pointed out, your job description indicates that you're practicing as a behavior analyst. How are you clarifying that to the people of Arizona that you work with, that you are just that you are acting as a behavior technician in one regard, and then within 2 minutes you could be acting as a behavior analyst? How is that being clarified to your colleagues, in some cases those that are reporting to you, and your clients?
I appreciate the question. I think it started with my initial interview for my current employer. When asked if I obtained the LBA, I was upfront with them and saying that I had not had it. I do not currently possess the LBA certification, and I've been completely upfront about that regard and that certification with my employer, going from my boss's boss all the way to my direct supervisor. And so it started there. It also starts in direct treatment when I am in direct treatment, you know, indicating to other staff, I'm only acting as a behavior technician in these instances. I'm more than willing to answer any questions, you know, relating to the science of applied behavior analysis, but in terms of making decisions that say would be, you know, under the responsibility of the supervisor for that client, I've always, you know, deferred those responsibilities responsibly. The next part of this that I'd like to indicate is, you know, when the situation calls for, say, you know, caregiver training or caregiver involvement with their child's services, you know, being forthcoming in those meetings of, you know, I'm here helping implement this treatment plan. You know, my direct supervisor, Brian Kokora, is acting as my direct supervisor. And so really clarifying with them in those meetings up front that, you know, hey, I'm here sort of taking the lead and answering any questions. But the reason for, you know, my supervisor being in attendance on these meetings is so that I can get training and supervision and you know, have somebody to defer to in those situations.
Okay. And then, and I guess I'd like you to respond to, we have in our statutes or rules, supervised experience requirements. And in that it lays out specifically what a your supervision requirements should look like and how supervision should take place, or at least outlines it. So I'm just curious what that looks like, because you mentioned that they're there, and there's, while you're not practicing, you may be engaging in behavior analytic activities as described within a supervision supervisory relationship. But how are you ensuring that these types of things, or that you're working with your employer, that this level of supervision still is occurring when you are acting as a behavior technician in the state or still under the supervision of a licensed behavior analyst of Arizona?
I'm going to try and answer your question as best I can. I'm not sure I fully understand the question. Well,
Mr. Oliver, so please. I'm looking here, and supervision should consist in the following areas: conducting assessments related to behavioral interventions, designing, implementing, and monitoring skill acquisition behavior reduction programs, overseeing implementation of behavior analytic programs by others, and so on. So there's a list there of activities that are defined as behavior analytic activities. However, you may engage in those, but you may engage in those only under the supervision of of a licensed behavior analyst in the state. So my question is how are you ensuring that this is in fact being done as defined in our regulations?
I think for me, the biggest indicators are, you know, humility, understanding kind of my role and where this whole situation has kind of put me in, and understanding, you know, that I don't have all the answers and that I do need some guidance and support around those items that you listed. I think that self-awareness is a huge asset in terms of, you know, when I am in that gray area, in that limbo state, you know, reaching out to my direct supervisor, getting help and support to make those decisions and really trying to defer to the individual who is ultimately responsible for those behavior analytic services.
Dr. Stanoff, I don't mean to jump in, but when I'm reading your statement, you're telling us that you're getting that supervision, that you are asking those questions. And I'll appreciate the humility as part of your answer to Dr. Stenhoff. You did not answer the question, Mr. Oliver. Are you taking a log to this information? Is there a paper trail to how this supervision that you've sought from a highly experienced BCBA is being tracked? How are you fulfilling, how can you convince this committee that you have rehabilitated around the issues that led to the initial denial when you are not able to answer the question that was just put forward with, hey, when I am, you know, working on an assessment, the BCBA is sitting there with me and providing direction. When I, you know, having trouble with a prompting strategy, I met with them for 30 minutes and these are the things we talked about. You provided no concrete information with regard to anything of substance with regard to your supervision. The statements, I find them evasive and I find them kind of, you know, really pie in the sky in terms of your discussion with us. You know, you're asking for us to trust you. You're asking for the public to trust you and us moving forward with this license. And I don't think there's been a direct answer. It's always about being on, you know, walking a tight line, or that there's a nuance to it. There is no real nuance. The rules and the statutes are clear. Dr. Stenhoff's question was clear. How are you tracking to ensure that supervision is happening?
I'm sorry, Dr. Davy. I apologize. I don't. No, I understand the question now, and I am. At my current employer, all of those instances are well documented. For example, you mentioned, you know, like a specific prompting strategy. If I have a question about a specific prompting strategy, meetings with my supervisor and the information that's held within those meetings is all very well documented on the systems that my current employer has. All of the supervision sessions that I'm receiving in my role are well documented on multiple platforms through my current employer. And that is my fault for misunderstanding the question. I do not mean to be evasive at all. And I apologize for that. But through my current employer, those sessions and those instances are all very well documented.
Dr. Davy and committee members, if I may, I would contend that, you know, Mr. Oliver, that where you were prior to your initial application to become a licensed behavior analyst, you're still kind of in that role right now. If you regard the supervision activities, as Dr. Davy just outlined a moment ago, and as I asked, you still need to be under that level of supervision, from my understanding of how the regulations are laid out. And maybe I'm misunderstanding that, and committee members or board, please correct me, or board staff, correct me if I'm wrong. But I think that would be an appropriate way to look at how you need to be viewing your supervision in the state. And also, you know, you mentioned the humility, but being in that status of being under a BCBA, still a licensed behavior analyst, excuse me, in the state is the role that you're still currently in as an Arizona employee providing services to individuals.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. I would like to make a motion to go to executive session.
Would that be for the purpose of receiving legal advice?
Yes, strictly for that exact reason. But I will need a second.
Yes.
A second.
Thank you. All right. Board staff, will you instruct us? Yeah, instruct everybody on what we're doing. Stop video, mute, and call in, correct?
That is correct. Heidi, I believe, emailed the phone number that you will need to call in.
And we do need a vote.
Ms. Galvin?
Yes.
We need a vote to move into executive session?
You do.
Okay. Dr. Davy?
I think you may have already started.
It's quite possible. So, do we have enough for Dr. Rates and I to vote to move forward?
Here we are.
Oh, Dr. Davey, okay.
I'm voting yes, thank you.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Pekkanen, just for the benefit of those who are participating, the board or the committee did leave executive session, but we took like a 5-minute comfort break and we're just returning from that comfort break.
Yes, everyone's due back at 11 a.m., which is now.
Which is now. All right. I forget. Do we need to take roll call that we're back from executive session?
I see everybody. Doctors Davey and Stenhoff are all present. So I think we're good to go. Okay.
And Dr. Rates is in our garden. So unless the committee has further questions, and I'll pause after I make the statement, I believe we can move into deliberations. So any other comments from the committee? Hearing none. Now we'll enter into deliberation. This is a time for the board member, the committee, a behavior analyst to have a discussion without interruption with regard to the substance and the facts related to this application. And so I would. I think, you know, the case itself is tragic on several levels, but I think that denial of this applicant, that we had some questions around moral character, in particular, questioning why someone would want to forge a document, why someone would indicate a different stop time than is what than what should have been reported, and then just the ensuing discussion around the applicant's behavior. I think we were very clear in our discussion previously that we needed to see this individual make a concerted effort to understand the state's rules, regulations, our statutes, to understand the ethics of being a behavior analyst, to understand billing practices around that. And while the CEU certificates suggest that the classes were completed, I am not convinced at this time that the applicant has rehabilitated himself in the short period of time since our initial denial. And I struggle with the issue of his current position. I struggle with just the information provided on his application to his current employer. I struggle with the resume that I saw that, you know, suggests that he is a clinical supervisor. I struggle with the answers of his activities within the state of Arizona, and just the lack of detail of what those actually look like. Struggle with a lack of understanding, even though the individual said he's receiving supervision from an individual at his current agency, that he's having trouble articulating to us in a clear fashion of his behavior analytic duties, what supervision looks like, doesn't look like, and essentially aligning that with his current position and those roles and responsibilities that I spoke of earlier. I think that gives me, giving the applicant the benefit of the doubt, and, you know, these are difficult times to answer the questions we pose, and they are, you know, he's not aware of the questions we're gonna ask before. You know, I'm just wondering if some additional information may help us gain some clarity, whether it's for better or for worse, around Mr. Oliver's activities. And I think the kind of information that that would help me make an informed decision as to what we need to do next is probably speaking with his current supervisor or supervisors at his current agency about what they're doing with him and what he's allowed to do and what he's working on inside of the state of Arizona and what those expectations look like. I think in line with that, I'd like to see some of the billing logs for Mr. Colton from, the date's probably January 1st, moving through the end of July, so that we might better understand what services he is essentially billing insurance companies for in the state of Arizona and whether that aligns with his current credentials. I'll pause there and let others kind of chime in on the deliberation.
Yeah, I think to your point, Dr. Davey, it would be good to get some more information and perhaps provide us with a bit more clarity around what's currently happening. I think it's also important, Mr. Oliver, to understand that your license is your license and it is not the license of your agency. And so in that space of professionalism and understanding your practice, it's very important that you also understand that you need to be doing the things that your certification requires. You need to be adhering to all of the rules and regulations and ethics of that profession and to really understand what it is that's happening under your name. And so to Dr. Davey's point, it's important to know what's being billed and not just to say, my agency's taking care of that, or it's important to really know what notes are happening, what's the documentation process, and to have a lot of ownership because it is indeed your license, it is indeed your certification and your responsibility to fully understand and to practice ways that are outlined. So I would just encourage you as you continue to go down your path and your profession that you really take continuing education seriously and that you really learn what is required of your practice so that you are taking ownership of that as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Davey, this is Jean Galvin. I hear that you want billing records from January 1st to through July 31st. Do you want all of his billing records? Do you want them to send a list of clients for whom he's billed and then staff will pick out a sample? What do you...
I think when I think about the billing logs, and again, I would love to hear what my colleagues have to think about this. I think there's a couple areas, right? I think if the committee was in agreement with essentially grabbing information, some testimony from the supervisor that would provide us clarification on position, role, and responsibilities, and the supervision notes pertaining to Mr. Oliver's supervision by this individual, again, spanning that time period of January till July 31st, those supervision notes, I think, would be helpful. With regard to the billing logs, I think what I would like to see is the daily progress notes for the clients that he served during that period. I think the important pieces of those billing notes are the date, the provider that's listed on there, the credentials of that individual, the service description, the CPT code, and the provider's signature. Dr. Reyes and Dr. Stenhoff, that's just off the top of my head thinking about the important pieces of that daily progress note / activity sheet that would probably be generated out of an EHR.
And Dr. Davey, just to clarify, would you want us to obtain those for all clients or get a list? And as G mentioned, I select a random sample, perhaps of 5 client files to get. I can do either option. I just want to make sure that I'm clear of what you would like to see.
I'm fine with a random list. I think the important piece is that they're Arizona residents. We've heard that there's activities going on in New Mexico as well. So long as it's a random list of the Arizona, and then we can select for the list and then you can select from there.
Okay.
But again, this is as part of the deliberation. I just think that'll help me make the call, because it's a difficult decision. And I think the more information we have, and in giving the applicant the benefit of the doubt that these are tough on the fly questions, and maybe he was just struggling on getting us these answers, this will answer the question. And this will help us, I think, in moving forward. Dr. Stenhoff, I know you have expertise in terms, and Dr. Reyes, you do as well, about those billing logs and what, you know, individuals that you're working with. Is there anything else inside of one of those billing logs that you think would be important? I mean, I think the service code description code is going to tell us, right? I mean, that's going to indicate what.
Yeah. I think that'll take care of it. Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate that. So if that's the case, I think I'll go ahead. If there's no other comments from the committee, I'll go ahead and make the motion that we table a decision on this application. And in the meantime, that we work with board staff to subpoena the individual's current employer. The request of the subpoena would be that the current supervisor or supervisors provide us testimony with regard to the applicant's positions at the agency, probably a timeline of those positions that includes roles and responsibilities, and this can be verbally or written, and then provide us the supervision notes pertaining to the applicant's active supervision since employment, which I think is, again, since January of 2020 through the end of July 2020. I think the second piece of that is requesting a client list of individuals in the state of Arizona that have received services from Mr. Oliver, and then allowing board staff to randomly select five of those individuals for which we would ask for daily activity or daily billing logs that would show the following: the date of service, the provider of record of that for that date, the credential of that individual, the service description, the CPT code, and the supervising BCBA, and the provider's signature. Did I say that slow enough for board staff? If not, I'll try to articulate that in an email if you need it. And I think, so that concludes my motion.
And just to clarify, with respect to the supervisor or supervisors, in addition to them providing a timeline, the roles and responsibilities of the supervisor notes, you also want that person or persons to appear at the meeting where this will be held, correct?
Please, yes.
All right, so that's your motion.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion, we have a second. Any further discussion, Dr. Reyes, Dr. Stenhoff? I think my discussion is simply this, to what Dr. Reyes already eloquently said. Mr. Oliver, this is about your license. This is about your practice of behavior analysis. This is about your understanding of the rules and statutes, regulations that govern the great responsibility that comes with this committee and ultimately the Board of Psychology examiners providing you a license. And your ability to demonstrate your knowledge of those statutes, rules, and regulations is paramount to moving forward in these discussions with us. And so I encourage you to, you know, see user done, but I encourage you to review, talk to your supervisor about those rules, continue to be a part of AZIAVA's SIGs that you've identified, continue to gain a working knowledge and develop a strong sense of what is required of you moving forward. Those kinds of things will go, and be conversant with us about that. That'll go a long way in the discussion of your request for us to view you as rehabilitated around these issues.
We do need a vote. I have the motion and the second, but no vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstain? Motion unanimously carries. Thank you, board members. Committee members. Ms. Gavin, do we want to ask if Mr. Oliver has any questions for you with regard to what next steps will be?
He may contact me or board staff if he does have any questions. And then I just think we need to get Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson back on the line.
Yes, she's about to join right now. I'm going to admit her to the meeting.
Okay.
Please make sure you tell her I did an outstanding job.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver.
I see that Dr. Davis-Wilson has rejoined us, so I will turn the gavel back over to her as chairwoman of this fine committee. Thank you.
Thank you, committee members. Dr. Davy, I appreciate it. We are now moving on to agenda item number 7. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Ms. Pakanon, can you please provide us an overview?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Just a couple of pieces of communication from the BACB. Overview of the changes coming to the certification standards. Really, this resource is intended mostly for the audience as applicants, but it's shared with regulators just more as a point of information. I don't see that there's necessarily anything that prompts this committee to react to that information, but I supply it to you just so you're informed. And then also the BACB wanted regulators to sort of understand its role relative to some of the discussions that are being held right now, and an opportunity to listen to a podcast that explains, you know, what the BACB's purpose is in contrast to the professional association and regulatory organizations. So it's open for discussion, but again, I don't see that this compels or prompts us to do anything in particular.
Thank you, Ms. Pakanon. Are there any committee members that have any comments or questions related to this matter? Excellent. I will just add that Ms. Pakanon and I did recently kind of run back through the rules one more time to make sure there were no 2022 surprises for applicants. And I think that in review of that, which because the BACB, their notice was talking about the 2022 changes happening, I think that it's important to note just for the professionals that there will be language discrepancies, but those language discrepancies are extremely important for making sure that we don't accidentally cut off applicants who fell before 2022. So because the BACB is able to apply it for applicants moving forward, the nature of licensure requires that we're aware of, you know, applicants who maybe were certified in 2004, 2005 that may move into the state, and we don't want the language to inadvertently exclude them for anything. So there will be some language discrepancies, but as far as the application of the changes and whether or not it's going to impede anybody getting licensed, I think at this time, the most recent rules that went into effect July 4th cover the biggest part of that issue, and that was the breakdown of the courses, because they've reallocated that breakdown of the VCS sequence. And our new rules don't include a breakdown at all. It just includes more of a statement regarding approved VCS programs. So I think that that is probably the only substantial piece that came out of that, but very helpful to have those updates from the BACB, and nice to see that they're communicating with the regulators across other states to ensure that there's adequate information with their transitions being presented to us. There's one other small area that we'll note, and I made a note for adding to a future meeting, and that's just a discrepancy in the new CEU requirements. And that's because the BACB change the CEU requirements without outside of their normal long-term planning. Normally we have 3 or 4 years of here's what's going to happen at the BACB, and every once in a while some things change a little bit more quickly. And so that's one area that I think in the future we'll have to look at. But other than that, I think I agree with Ms. Pacman that there's really just mostly information and not much we need to do with it. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, we will go ahead and move to item number 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding licensure and regulatory issues relative to COVID-19. Ms. Pacman, can you please provide us an overview?
Yes, Madam Chair. So I think this agenda item, the way that it's broadly framed, allows for lots of potential discussion. But what I thought the committee would benefit from reviewing is the research article, some actions for BA licensing bodies to consider in response to the pandemic. As I read the article personally, I was struck by the fact that I think that this committee and this board, they're adhering pretty well to this guidance. So there's still, potentially some opportunities to address here, but I really think that the committee and the board have been remarkably proactive, at least relative to how, this particular article framed those opportunities. But I would be interested in hearing if the committee members see things, maybe a little different than me, but overall, I think we're addressing the pandemic as regulators with, as well informed as we possibly can be, as thoughtfully as we can be. And then the second piece to this, I had been describing, maybe an opportunity to try to develop some sort of a reporting tool just to help a future committee, future board, sort of, see how the various waivers need to be considered over a timeline, who they impact and when. So this was my attempt to try to sort of illustrate what I thought that could look like. What this, it's a draft, so let's be clear, but what it illustrates is, what it assumes is that if the emergency is lifted January 31, we can debate whether that's likely or not. This is how those waivers would be illustrated. So some clearly end on the date of the lifting of the emergency in this illustration, January 31, while at least one extends for a period of time past July 31. And then of course we have the issue with the BACB's temporary deviation from client observations, which, I tried to illustrate that because we know that we will probably have applicants that fall into that unfortunate timing gap and will require acquisition of some additional hours, not for certification purposes, but for our licensure purposes. This doesn't incorporate applicants for licensure. That would be, I think, a separate tool because there's a lot of variation in the timeframes associated with waivers that were granted for applicants. So I hope this makes sense. It makes sense in my mind, but I'm really interested in your feedback.
Any committee members have any comments for Ms. Pacman?
No, I would just say this is extremely helpful. I'm glad to hear that your take was similar to mine, that we're not that far off and working in a good space. I appreciate you organizing this for us, and draft or not, that's a substantial step forward for us in terms of articulating the position. So thank you for that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just agree. I think this visual is really, really helpful. So I appreciate that you drafted this, and I think it is going to be useful in terms of seeing things and where they're at. So I very much appreciate the visual.
As a visual learner myself, this is sort of these are the kinds of strategies that I gravitate toward. Of course, this is a public record, so this can be shared with anyone who requests it. So, proactively, I can reach out to the profession and offer this resource to them as well. So if you have anything specific that you want me to do other than continue to work on it, because, you know, there still are unknowns. The primary unknown, of course, is when does the emergency end? At which point then, you know, this can be really useful.
Ms. Pacman, thank you. That was going to be my question. Is this something that we are able to get over potentially to the professional association, or something as Ms. Folks could use as part of the licensing process to help licensees understand? We do have a few observers on the phone today, kind of just listening to the meeting. And so I do want to cover just that discrepancy just a little bit from just an educational perspective. What had happened was the BACB at the end of April, or the last 2 weeks of April-ish, it released a statement saying, hey, we understand that you can still accrue indirect or your unrestricted hours without seeing patients, and therefore we will waive the patient requirement if patients aren't available for you. Because that deviates from licensure, we had to still go through the formal process, one under the executive order for the department. It was the Department of Health that said, hey, if you guys need to, or we're encouraging you guys to make necessary waivers and accommodations in light of the pandemic. By the time we had kind of that blessing, that understanding of what the BACB was doing, and then went through the formal process of getting it approved by the full board, there's about a little over two and a half week gap between when certification said, hey, this is not necessary for certification, and when licensure was able to say, hey, we'll go ahead and meet that as a waiver as well. So it's important for those that are listening and for our professional association and others to really think about where they can proactively looking at meeting that short gap for the applicants so that they don't run into an issue when they do come before the board to have their applications seen. So I think that the tool is very helpful, and I agree with Dr. Davey. I was pleasantly surprised seeing the article and seeing how proactive we had been in being able to get a lot of those things addressed. And so we appreciate the board staff and the work that they've been doing to kind of keep us ahead of the game there. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item 9. It's going to be discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding committee vacancy. Ms. Pacanon, can you please provide us an update?
Yes, Madam Chair. No written materials associated with this agenda item because I had hoped that from last week to this week, maybe there would have been some developments to share, to announce. But what I learned, I believe it was exactly a week ago, from meeting with the director of the Governor's Office of Boards and Commissions. They're working on a substantial batch of appointees to lots of boards and commissions. And within that batch, there is at least one candidate for this committee that has reached sort of the final stage of the appointment consideration process, which is the background check. Generally, when an applicant reaches that stage, as long as it's a favorable outcome, then you know it's an appointment is likely. I wouldn't quite say imminent, but at least likely. So what this assures us is that our need to fill this vacancy is definitely being acknowledged and addressed. It's in progress, and hopefully next month, or I guess the end of this month when we have our next meeting, perhaps then we'll have appointment information to share.
Excellent, thank you. And I'll add to that that Ms. Pacanon has also continued the work and the conversations with the Professional Association regarding my recommendation at the last meeting to really start thinking about proactively what they're going to be doing about vacancies. And it looks like we're seeing some movement. Ms. Pacnon's been in contact with some of them, seeing some movement as far as them developing process and procedures for proactively addressing the vacancy so that we don't have quorum issues in the future. So that is a good update as well. Does anybody have any questions, comments? All right, hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to item number 10, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding current public meetings and public safety orders. Ms. Pacnon, can you please provide us an update?
Yes, certainly. This is on the agenda in the event there is information to share. There is nothing at this point in time. Status quo as far as agency operations are concerned, public meetings are concerned. Staff has acknowledged that we will probably continue to meet virtually for the foreseeable future. In doing so, there are some positive implications for the agency budget. It does save us some costs associated with meetings. So that's a favorable development. A side effect of the situation, but we, until directed otherwise by the governor, will continue to stay the course. We do know that a few agencies are meeting in person. It's very few in our building. For the most part, virtual meetings are have become the standard for public bodies in Arizona.
Excellent, thank you. I have one question related to the public meetings and the current pandemic. So when, for the CEUs, when individuals are attending for credit, how is that currently being captured by board staff? I know that looks probably a little bit different than before. And I ask because, apologize, I thought I turned my email off. I asked because I know that we're coming up on another school semester. I know that many of the classes, specifically the psychology ethics classes, and of course the behavior analyst ethics classes, do require attendance of this meeting, one of these meetings for credit. And so I want to make sure that for this or for anybody who's looking for additional CEUs that's already licensed, that we have a clear understanding of how they're going to receive that credit.
Yeah, so I'm going to be able to give you a partial response, and I would love Jean to weigh in on this as well. So the credit can only be extended to attendance at a board meeting, not a committee meeting. And I think you said that, but I just wanted to make sure that that I stated that as well. So R-426-207, it might be that in-person attendance is required in order to earn credit. I'm going to scroll to the rule and see if that is the case. I know staff had a discussion among staff recently that we wanted to clarify, like on board meeting agendas, that attending by Zoom is not credit-based. So let me confirm if that is indeed the case.
The rule seems to say that the board shall allow a maximum of 10 continuing education hours for each of the following: attending a board meeting or serving as a board member, for attending 6 hours for attending both the morning and the afternoon sessions of a meeting, 3 hours for attending either the morning or the session. It just says attending. It doesn't require in-person attendance.
Yes, I definitely see that now. So I'm unclear sort of how we came to this place where we thought it needed to be in person. So it seems that we need to possibly revisit that and clarify that for licensees who, attend our meetings for purposes of obtaining the credit.
And I think there'd be some way that they would, contact you. They'd have to fill out that summary sheet send it back to you, and then they would be emailed their certificate.
Yeah, I can envision even an electronic intake form of some kind where, you know, we would collect the information that way and distribute certificates after the meeting. So I don't see that as being daunting or problematic. So I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think our mindset was in person was necessary, but I'm definitely not seeing that in the rule now.
And I would imagine, I would honestly think that maybe the assumption was in person just because historically the telephonics have been less than 3 hours. And so the way that it's written, it probably has been an assumption that telephonic would not count for that reason. But now in our current state, some of the meetings, particularly the board meetings themselves, are going substantially longer than 3 hours. So I think that that's probably just a future agenda item for the board side. Then I think the committee side, and as far as any committee members or university professors that wish to have students attend the committee meetings, they just need it worked in between their process, between the student and the professor, and not something that would involve board staff, because it wouldn't be a part of that process, I would imagine. And that's fine. I just wanted clarification because it had come up while I was writing my syllabus. So I just wanted to make sure that was something that we were looking at as well. All right, any other questions or comments?
Just a follow-up statement. I think that there's an opportunity to reach out proactively to the program directors, or you know, whoever is responsible for assembling the students, or you know, directing the students to attend board meetings. So you know, we can explain that attendance looks different these days, but this is what it consists of, and we still very much encourage them to come and experience what is a board meeting.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you. All right, hearing no further discussion, we will move on to agenda item 11, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding modification to license application language specific to verification of supervised work experience or independent field work and eligibility to supervise. Ms. Pakanon, can you please provide us an overview?
Certainly, and I'm going to also invite Ms. Folks chime in since this is her area of expertise. But I'm sure the committee members remember that at our most recent meeting, one of the agenda items that you identified to put on this agenda reflects the need to evaluate licensure application currently in use to determine whether some edits are needed to effectively capture whether the individuals who are presenting as supervisors for BAs are actually eligible to perform that role. And this, of course, relates to discussion about the role and the purpose, what the supervision encompasses. Is it, you know, affiliated a pro practicum, or is it truly supervision considered by this committee as that supervision that's eligible for licensure? So Ms. Folks took opportunity to present some possible edits. We thought it would be beneficial for the committee to react to some suggested edits rather than try to wordsmith them here together. So if you scroll down through the application by page 9, you'll see some highlighted text, which we think, you know, is appropriate for this committee to discuss and provide some direction to us. So particularly, I think it's questions 8 and 9.
If I may, on the note, the parenthetical note on number 9 or item 9, where it says 4 BAs, I would maybe switch that to behavior analysts.
because it hasn't been defined above as an abbreviation. And then below, it's also used as behavior analyst. So you may want to just keep the language of behavior analyst in there. Just I worry about people getting confused of what that might mean. So I would just maybe change that to behavior analyst and just keep that language throughout.
Clear and consistent, yes.
Am I number eight? Just starting with the box, during the entire period of supervision, was the supervisor a BCBA certified behavior analyst? Okay, so it's I guess that's the way that has to read. It was just thinking, is the person a BCABA? But it's really, you're talking about, are they certified by the board? Gotcha.
So it would be Dr. Davey instead, should it be listed as BACB instead of BCBA?
Yeah, because if it's referencing the actual board, was a supervisor a,
BACB.
Certified, a BACB certified behavior analyst.
Or you could go acronym crazy and go BACB, BCBA, but that might
be awkward. Or it could be just, was the supervisor a BCBA, registered trademark?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not exactly what the spirit of the language is there, but I think we can clean that up.
Okay. Ms. Folks, are you following this along with me? So together we make sure that we get it.
Yes. Certified behavior analyst there, spelling it out is superfluous. It's redundant. I didn't catch that before. Thank you.
So let's just have it read. Was the supervisor a BCBA who met the BACB's supervision requirements? Right?
Yes. I will take care of that. Definitely.
And so by the BACB's supervision requirements, there we mean they've taken the 8-hour coursework to be a BCBA. There's some new rules that are getting ready to roll from the BACB with regard to who can supervise. Is that also redundant?
I don't think it's redundant. Sorry, Dr. Davey. I went to the BACB's website and looked at the way they express this, and I stole that language directly from their website, borrowed, I should say.
So the eligible to provide supervision? That came from that as well, from that,
the supervision. Yes, it did, because the supervision requirements and then eligible, they were, because they're changing the requirements, they're requiring a year, I guess, of certification and practice before they can be eligible to even get the supervision requirements or take the 8-hour course. Put it all in there.
And I think that'll make sense, because the way that we pull supervisor eligibility is from that section of the BACB's website. And so my guess is that they will not allow for that section to be filled on the registry if they are certified less than a year. I think they'll have a difficult time regulating whether or not the BCBA can take the 8-hour course, just because there's a lot of private entities that offer that course. And so I think they're going to have to just do it in that registry and make sure that they don't give that approval date in the registry until they've exceeded that 1 year. And hopefully they've thought that out, that they don't have somebody who takes the class in the first month of certification and then a year later is all of a sudden eligible for supervision just because the time passed. But we'll see kind of what it looks like when they roll it out. I think the verbiage on the application makes sense.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, this is Kathy. I have another question, another point on that. There's always the chance that, and it's rare, of course, but a BCBA could be sanctioned by the BACB and take away their supervision, their eligibility to provide supervision under, some sort of extreme circumstances. I know it's hypothetical, but it's good to have the language in there just in case.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right. Another on that, the same section I mentioned earlier, number 9, where the open, I think it's a parenth where, I don't know if that said right, but right before the word please at the beginning, where's the closed parenth for that? Would it follow? There's two in the second from the last line, following R4-26-404.2C, then two parenth, follow that. Would that follow the B at the end? I'm sorry.
Yes, it would.
It's really
Thank you
sorry,
for catching but, the typo. Yeah. Thanks for catching the typo.
Sorry.
So feeling good about that.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, board staff. I think that those kind of typo edits, I think that the rest of the committee members agree. Excellent. Any other questions or comments or suggestions? Hearing none. Board staff, do you have, Ms. Folk specifically, do you have any questions?
I just want to be sure that you are all satisfied with number 10 with my addition. The committee has reiterated this numerous times over the last couple of years, and I just think it's good to add it to the application.
I agree. Awesome. All right. Thank you, Ms. Folks, for your work on that and other board staff. We appreciate it. We will go ahead and move on now to item number 12, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding modification to license application language for purposes of identifying applicants who completed education program sponsored practicum training. Ms. Pakanon, can you please provide us an update?
Yes, so a very closely related agenda item or discussion, but just for purposes of ensuring that we addressed everything that you identified to add to this agenda from last meeting. Again, the edits that we've just discussed, they are intended to meet this also that discussion. So it's really this committee needs to give us some direction whether you think that the changes that we just discussed also eliminate our understanding relative to when an applicant presents and in the process identify someone as a supervisor when the supervisor really served that purpose for the program requirements and not for licensure requirements. So we're hoping that, you know, we're capturing all of this just with the edits that you're looking at right now. But if we're missing something, if there's some nuance or something that needs to be added for purposes of clarity, then, you know, we're happy to take that direction.
Ms. Pakanon, I was looking at the changes to the supervision form. And in thinking of how people have, what other options they have to apply, they can turn in the BACB form, which would not give us all of this information. And if we had reasonable suspicion as to why we always have that part of the rule that says we can request additional documentation. But I'm wondering, one, because of the complexity with regard to the practicum sites and the challenges that some of the practicum sites have in understanding regulation across all of the states. And part of it, I think they've kind of taken a stance of, it's really not our role, it's the student's responsibility to understand the regulation within their own state. I'm wondering if somewhere in the application, separate of the supervision piece, or maybe in both pieces, we ask the question of whether or not their experience was done as part of a university practicum, because I think that we're still going to run into circumstances in which, and we had one particular applicant that stands out to me, and we spoke to the professor and we understood, for me it made sense as to what happened with that individual's 1500 hours. But the reality of it is on paper, that supervisor still signed that supervision occurred at a on-site location in which the supervisor was not licensed to be able to practice at. And so I think we're still going to get that muddied water. And I think it's not specific to just the supervisor's attestation, because if they fill out the BACB form, which is essentially how we figured out this was happening, right? Like, we got the BACB forms for these applicants that showed us, well, we've got a list of professors that are submitting forms, basically saying I'm supervising. And so I wonder if, and I welcome obviously committee members' feedback on it. I wonder if there's somewhere in the application that we should just capture that question, so that we either know if we're not familiar with the program, that we know what additional information to ask for, or if we are familiar with the program, how we will start to kind of delegate. I know we can't pick and choose programs per se, but I know that there's a lot of programs out there, and I've heard of them nationwide that professors are signing off on all sorts of hours, including hours that I think are questionable as to whether they should even count towards the 1500 hours at all. And so I think that it's going to continue to be problematic, because there's a lot of programs out there. And while we were fortunate to have some of the top programs, the professors come forward and explain to us their process in such a way that we could say, like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm not confident that that's a universal approach by all of the universities. And I am concerned about the professors who are signing off on development of materials and coloring pages and things like that that are extremely problematic. And then those individuals are able to move to Arizona and say, well, or they live in Arizona and we don't capture it because all of that's being signed off on in group supervision by the university. I'm just concerned that the nature of the 1500 hours isn't consistent with the statute. So I don't know how other committee members feel, but I feel like we're still missing something that captures whether or not there was some level, some form of supervision that is being attested to at the BACB level that may not meet statutory requirements.
Yeah, I think we were trying to capture that in question 8, but I'm wondering if question 8 needs to be a multi-part question to capture.
And Dr. Davis-Wilson, this is Kathy.
Yes.
I can see adding a question under or after 19 on the application on page 5. You might want to word a question there to capture the information you want. Take a look at that and see what you think.
I like that. And Ms. Pakanon, I agree that it's captured in that form. My concern is that we now allow for the other forms. And so if a supervisor isn't filling out that form, we would have nowhere else in the application to capture it. And I agree that in the application, because we are asking about what their graduate level instruction is, that maybe we could craft a question there that asks something along the lines of, you know, did they receive any practicum hours or supervision hours signed off by, I don't know, a professor or somewhere.
I wonder if it can't, to that point, something around, are any of the hours you've submitted, supervision hours you've submitted towards licensure from a professor or something, and then how many? Because if they've submitted everything and we see, you know, 1800 hours and they indicate that 300 were that, then we'd be able to look at that.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
I agree. And I think maybe even listing the professor, because I could see, you know, someone in Dr. Senhoff's program saying yes, or potentially, and Dr. Senhoff is licensed. So it could be a circumstance too, where they answer yes, and we could do a verification of licensure for that as well. So maybe that multi-part question falls, you know, after 19 in that similar fashion. Ms. Folks, does that kind of make sense to you? Do we want to maybe play around with some language of that to present at the next CBA meeting?
Yes. What I grabbed there from what Dr. Wright said, are any of the supervision hours you are applying towards licensure, and you said are from a professor. Is there better language for that? What would be more official, I guess?
I think by a university professor within your coursework or something, it would have been easy before to say as part of a practicum experience, but the BACB is doing away with that language. And so I think that we would run into some issues with that language. And I think even if we captured it by a university professor or by a program-specific university professor, I don't know. Because I guess, obviously, I don't want them to, like, list all, you know, yes, just because they happen to have adjunct faculty that's also their site supervisor. They've never done a class from that person.
So are any of the supervision hours you are applying towards licensure by a university professor within your graduate program?
I would be okay with that.
Is the word by typical? Is it, I don't know enough to know for sure.
Or through.
Overseen? Oh, no, that wouldn't work.
You say, were any hours supervised by university faculty or your program faculty?
Yeah. Like the university faculty as a component of your graduate program. And I don't think we have to get the language right today. I think if she can get an idea of how to draft it and then present it, then we'll have it in front of us and we can kind of wordsmith from there.
Sounds great. I will have this for you for the next CBA meeting, if that is your preference.
Yeah, and Ms. Folks, did you catch Dr. Reed's suggestion of, if so, how many hours, so that we can...
Yes.
After that, and then the name of the university faculty member, because like I said, I would hate to get an application all the way to this point and then just find out it's you know, one of the many faculty members that are also licensed.
Absolutely. Perfect. Yes, I've added that.
Excellent.
As well.
All right, any other questions or comments from the committee members? Excellent. We'll be looking forward to that draft language. Thank you so much, Ms. Folks. We appreciate that. We'll move on now to agenda item number 13. That's going to be new agenda items for future meetings. I have two that I noted just from our conversations today. One is related to the slight CEU discrepancy in the rule writing for the most recent rules, and specifically, I don't know at what point, but we may want to start getting a head start of what we would like that CEU section, if we were to propose draft language changes, what we would like to propose. I know it's a little bit probably premature because we don't even, our next set of rule writing won't happen until we have some of the statute changes that we've requested go into effect or even be heard, I suppose, at this point, be proposed. And so we're looking, you know, at earliest July of next year, but I'm just wondering, one of the historical issues that we've had with rule writing is our own ability as a committee to just kind of craft and recraft that language before it even gets sent to the rule writer. And so I don't know if we want to, perhaps on, and board staff could use judgment, but perhaps on some lighter meetings, maybe having that as an agenda item for us to start to plug away at, being cognizant that it isn't time sensitive. So if it's a heavier meeting, maybe we don't need to focus on it. But if we do have any agendas that are a little bit lighter in nature, that maybe we can start plugging away at some of the upcoming rule writing that we will need to be doing likely sometime towards the end of 2021, early 2022. Again, that sounds, it'll come up fast. but having been a part of the rule writing process multiple times, like we know that this has not, it is not a very fast process. So I think anything we can do ahead of time might help. But I would encourage that to be on agendas that are a little bit lighter in nature. The other agenda item that I noted is specific for a request or recommendation for the full board to review the CEU participation requirements through the pandemic. Specific to students, psychology and behavior analysts, not students, I'm sorry, we resolved students a little bit. Well, I guess we could still have the discussion, being that I think several of the full board members might also be interested as they're developing their fall syllabi to figure out how they're going to mitigate their requirements for that, but more specifically how a licensee can get credit for the meeting since we are not going to be in person for the foreseeable future. Any other agenda items for future meetings? Excellent. And for board staff, are those two items okay? You guys have any questions on those two items? Excellent. All right, hearing none, we will move to agenda item 14, adjournment. Do we have a motion?
That's a move.
Excellent.
I'll second.
Excellent. We have a motion and a second. So the meeting is adjourned right at 12 o'clock. Thank you, guys.